This episode is sponsored by Interactive Brokers. I want you to discover the future of trading with IBKR Desktop, Interactive Brokers' next-generation trading platform. Built from the ground up, IBKR Desktop combines powerful features with a unique set of groundbreaking trading tools in a streamlined, intuitive interface. With access to over 150 markets, IBKR Desktop puts global stocks, options, futures, currencies, bonds, and funds at your fingertips. IBKR Desktop includes innovative features like multi-sort, which lets you sort data using multiple factors simultaneously, helping you quickly identify trading opportunities, and the option lattice, which visually highlights key metrics for smarter decisions. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, IBKR Desktop redefines what traders can expect from a trading platform. Experience the future of trading today. And whether you're located in the US or Australia, Germany, you'll be amazed with the power of IBKR Desktop. Download IBKR Desktop at ibkr.com/desktop. Interactive Brokers is a member of SIPC.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
NVIDIA earnings so good, they suck the markets dry. Fed minutes sounding a bit more hawkish. And bond yields on the rise again. Copper falling from all-time highs. And our guest today is Michael Johnston, CFA and co-founder of Wealth Channel. All this and much more on episode number 870 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, howdy. Say hello to the summer heat, the oppressively hot. I mean, it was 83% humidity yesterday morning here. And I got to tell you something, that isn't funny. It's hot. It's more than hot. When you have 90 degree temperature and 83% humidity, it is really nasty. It sits on you. It's like you're in a schwitz. Just getting that steam room going. Worse than a sauna. I mean, much worse than a sauna. Hey, I'm Andrew Horowitz. Welcome to the coolest podcast on finance, the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Here for many years and excited to hear from today's guest, what we're going to talk about with him, because it's all about financial education here, right? And what happened this week? What's going on? Well, we had some things that were pretty exciting that was people were anticipating for months, and that was number one, can't live without it, NVIDIA. NVIDIA had blowout earnings and some really interesting commentary that surrounded. Some of the things that I heard were, for example, discussions about how money that was on the balance sheet of companies, right? Money that was just sitting there stuck, not being used for anything, was pretty much moved over to the free cash flow of NVIDIA. And then a multiple applied to get a nice bump in the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ in terms of their overall earnings, and then therefore translating that into, well, prices. And some stats recently showed that upwards of 40% of the earnings growth in the S&P 500 over the last couple of quarters, unbelievable, is all from NVIDIA. And the company is, in fact, minting money. We know that. And they saw the numbers that were pretty amazing what they did. How long is that going to go? I mean, the CEO came out and talked about how they think it's going to continue going. And due to the fact that the Blackwell chip is coming, and even though people may slow down some purchases here and there, most will not because it's easing conversion cycle, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, Amazon halted all buys of NVIDIA chips until the Blackwell comes out, and that could be sometime end of year or into next year. On the DH Unplugged podcast this week, myself, John C. Dvorak, each and every Thursday, talking about all things that are suited well for discussion surrounding around the entirety of the financial markets. We talked about, is there a possible Osborne effect? If you don't know what that is, listen in to the show. Is there a possible Osborne effect that's going on with NVIDIA? And is that starting with the announcement from Amazon this week? But markets took the information overnight as, wow, that's exciting. I think I saw the NASDAQ futures up 200 points. I think it was Thursday, overnight Thursday night into Thursday morning. Well, Wednesday night to Thursday morning. And then that kind of all of a sudden started to slow down. We saw a lot of concern about Boeing and a few things that were going on in the other markets, and the small caps were down 1.8% that day. And it was like NVIDIA was getting all the excitement and all the glory, and everybody else was just suffering. And markets weren't happy. Maybe it was on the heels of this could be the pinnacle, the top of the AI narrative. Some are calling it a bubble. We'll call it a narrative. Or maybe everyone's just piling all their money saying, screw it, let's just take everything out of everywhere else. 10-for-1 stock split. Let's put it into NVIDIA. Who knows? But we also heard from Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon, obviously J.P. Morgan, who is not all that excited about where the economy was going. He said stagflation. He said the word out loud. Oh my gosh, you're not supposed to do those things. You're not supposed to say things like stagflation. That's under your breath. That's kind of a murmur. That's a thought. You know, saying it out loud brings on the boogeyman. But he said it. He's worried about something like that could be the worst case scenario and the possibility of a hard landing. Stagflation, where prices continue going up, we're in a recession, and unemployment is spiking. That's a rough situation. And the minutes from the Fed didn't help either. The minutes from their last meeting were, I would say, a good deal more hawkish than people had hoped for. That's even after Powell did his best to walk things back last week. And we had mixed economic numbers this week. We saw some ISM numbers or some global numbers that came out in terms of manufacturing. There were some good numbers, some bad numbers. Generally speaking, we weren't overheating. We're not falling down. So that's good. I mean, basically, mixed results, if you think about it, that are out there. If we have both sides of things, kind of a neutral outlook. Not really bad. Not a problem. So what does all that mean? Not much. Not much changes. You know, we'll have to see if this initial sell-off will be met next week, let's say, with buyers. Getting towards the end of the month, maybe there's something going on there. Getting one more month till the end of the quarter, halfway through the year. Maybe it was to sell the news and then just buy. Because we know there is a proclivity right now. There is a desire to be buying into the market. The idea we talked about time and time again, that people are looking past the interim news. Now, maybe what they're doing is looking past the news today. Think of it that way. Saying, you know what? That's about it. I'm not sure what happened last week. That news that we're seeing right now, that markets are skittish all of a sudden. But right now, we're still sporting a general uptrend. Starting to look like maybe some consolidation is coming into play here. Market, listen, we can all agree, I think, that the market has run pretty far, pretty fast. Seeing that PE ratio is getting stretched again. You know, we saw as we're hitting all-time highs, while earnings are okay. And again, a lot of it concentrated primarily in NVIDIA. The fact still remains that what we're seeing is a 21 forward PE. A little hot, getting on to 22, actually. So, today, we're going to talk about your future. And what would that means right now is we're going to bring on this week's guest because we're going to talk all about this with him. So let's do that. Let's cue it up. Let's get it going. Let's open the mics and let's start talking. And our guest today is Michael Johnston. He's a CFA, a chartered financial analyst, an industry veteran with a passion for improving outcomes for retail investors. We're going to get to that. He was very entrenched in the ETF industry. He's involved with ETF database and grew it to the largest independent media property covering exchange-traded funds. And now that was bought out. He's also now co-founded Wealth Channel with the mission of helping investors achieve financial independence by radically simplifying retirement planning and investing. Michael, his responsibility primarily is for the content and education initiatives, including his flagship Wealth Channel Academy. And the reason we wanted to, you know, like, listen, last month was Financial Literacy Month, but every week is Financial Literacy Week on the Disciplined Investor podcast. So we're going to talk all sorts of things related to finance, investments, and your life and all that. And I'm glad that you're with us, Michael. So thanks for coming aboard.
It is a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, you have this passion for improving outcomes for retail investors. Let's just stop right there and ask you, what does that exactly mean?
Well, I think that you have to look at it is what matters is what you keep, right? So not the top line returns, but what matters is what you keep at the end of the day. You can't eat gross returns. What matters is what you've got left after three things: after taxes, after fees, and after inflation. So the first part of my career was focused on the fee side of that. And as the ETF industry boomed and put downward pressure on expenses, on investment product expenses, that's kind of one piece of it. And then more recently, I've been focused on the tax piece of it, as I've realized that a lot of people just don't appreciate the impact that taxes are going to have on their bottom line. But you actually have a lot of control over that. I have not figured out how to tame inflation yet. So maybe that'll be my third act. But I think that's going to be the toughest one. So I'm focusing on that. I've been focusing on the first two, taxes and fees.
So it's interesting because when you look at the fee environment of what we've seen over the last number of years, when I say last number of years, I'm talking about a lot of years. Obviously, fees have come down dramatically. I mean, I remember there was a Fidelity contract deal that was like 8.5% fees per year that you were like locked into.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, like literally locked into. And then there was all this, front end loaded stuff that was anywhere from 8.5% or maybe even 5%. And they would give you various breakpoints, even if you had over $1 million, which was a lot of money back then. It was like 1%. But one of the things that I question about the fees, and I'm all in favor, by the way, of lower fees. I just want to throw this out there. Is it stupid to get so overwhelmingly entrenched in the thought of, oh, look at that fee, it's really low compared to that one? Isn't net returns more important?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I think you can go overboard with this stuff. And there were a lot of, like pretty egregious examples. I mean, you just mentioned a few of them, right? Like I think looking at some of those more egregious things where you're charging front load fees that are like getting close to double digits, right? Like that's crazy. And that's pretty difficult to justify. But I agree with your point, and I think you're absolutely right that like you shouldn't necessarily just optimize for, like, you're optimizing for what you keep, and there's kind of two pieces of that, the top line return and then what you take away in fees. And I do think it can be foolish to just pay the absolute bare basement, what's the absolute minimum you can pay in fees. Like that's ultimately not what you're optimizing for, right? You are optimizing for what you have left over at the end of the day. And yes, fees are part of that equation, but you don't want to be penny wise and pound foolish here, right? And get totally obsessed with just minimizing fees. So it's a little bit more, I agree with you, it's a little more complicated and a little more nuanced. I think downward pressure on fees has been overwhelmingly a good thing. But again, that shouldn't, I don't think, be the only thing that you're optimizing for.
Right. Because if you look at it like active versus passive, for example, passive fees should be low. I mean, it's passive. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is like letting it run. And these days with computers, you could just do a click. Okay. Match up. Thank you. We're done. But what's interesting, I've talked to clients. I said, listen, how about if I talk to you about an investment? I made this up. You know, this is some BS. There's no such thing as this. It's no, people don't get crazy when I say this, that you can make 40% per year. Okay. Everybody's like, I'll take that. Is there such a magical thing? No. But my point is, but if the manager actually made 80% per year, kept 40 for themselves and gave you 40, you're not going to complain about that.
Yeah.
You know, but on the other hand, you know, you have an investment that charges you, I don't know, 25 basis points, and it has subpar returns compared to everything. But I'm only paying 25 basis points. There's a lot of people that I've seen over the years in the beginning, particularly when ETFs came out, that got like really nuts about this.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were, you know, they're trying to shave off every single basis point. And you can do the math there, right? And figure out, well, what is that? What is every extra basis point in fees you shave off actually save you, right? And depending on the size of your portfolio, like it's you know, you're kind of, you run into the risk of kind of tripping over nickels here, right? At the expense of missing out on some of these investment opportunities where the fees are quite a bit higher, but the expected returns are a lot higher too. Yeah. And, you know, one thing that's kind of happened in parallel here is the expansion of some alternative asset classes that have been democratized and opened up to smaller investors, where the fees are quite a bit higher. You know, you get into like the 2 and 20 fee structure you mentioned, and there's other fees buried in there, but the returns have been quite a bit higher too. Like a lot of investors have done really well investing in real estate syndications and ground up construction. And the fees are higher there. Like they'd make the bogle heads on that forum, like they make their eyes.
Yeah,
they make
them explode.
Their head, right?
Heads would explode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But the folks in those asset classes,
happy
have done
as clams.
Really well.
Happy as clams.
Yeah.
I mean, same thing with commodities, same thing with the Bitcoin, same thing with all this stuff. It wasn't accessible for the masses. Well, so they have to pay up. But the other thing is there's sometimes reason why there's a lot of work being done and you pay for what you get. You know, there is, you know, look, there's also the potential to lose money. Let's not forget that. But, you know, you talk about real estate syndications or ground up construction. I mean, that's early stage stuff that requires a lot of oversight and advice and management and tremendous amount of expenditures.
Yep. Yeah. And a great example there of where you, you know, you probably don't want to go with the cheapest option, because I can tell you who's going to be the cheapest option there. It's going to be someone who's never done this before. Mm-hmm. And they figure that's how they're going to differentiate themselves. Right. They're going to say, well, I'm not charging fees. I'll reel in people that way. I don't have a track record to speak of. I don't really know what I'm doing. But if I can lean on having a favorable fee structure, I'm going to get some investment dollars in the door. Yep. And to your point, that's not the person you want to invest in. You want to invest in someone, you know, there's an asset class where track record, all these asset classes, track record matters a lot. Right.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Totally. Let's take a quick break. We're going to just bring in a discussion right after the break about a question that we're going to start with. And we're going to bring up alternatives soon. We're going to talk about, you know, the impact of taxes and stuff. But I want to kind of hit Michael with the question of an article that he recently wrote and a discussion he's recently had and some education that he's done in the area of, dare I say, Social Security. As a matter of fact, he spent a few past episodes of your podcast. Are you still doing your podcast, by the way?
Yes. We've moved it to a video format, but yes, still doing it.
Okay, because I looked on your website and I saw it through March on the website.
Yeah, we're still doing it in a video format.
Okay. Well, you talked about this several times in March and April, but let's just hold on to that and let's come back to that in a second. And we're talking about optimizing. So I want to talk about a way to help you boost returns with IBKR, Stock Yield Enhancement Program. Interactive Brokers Stock Yield Enhancement Program helps you earn extra income on fully paid shares of stock in your brokerage account. It works by allowing IBKR to borrow fully paid shares from you in exchange for collateral, either U.S. Treasuries or cash. IBKR then lends your shares to traders who want to sell them short. Each day that your stock is on loan, you'll be paid interest on the collateral value for the loan based on market rates. See why the best informed investors choose Interactive Brokers. Open an Interactive Brokers account today at IBKR.com/SYEP. All right, we're back with Michael Johnston, CFA with Wealth Channel. By the way, CFA, just to let anybody know, that's a hard test.
Yeah, it's three hard tests.
Yeah, three hard tests. And I'm going to ask you something, which I apologize. How'd you do the first one?
I passed.
You did?
I did. I'm going to brag about this.
Yeah, you should.
A lot of work, a lot of hours, a lot of Memorial Day weekend studying while everyone else was out having fun and drinking beers and enjoying the sunshine. I passed all three of them on my first try. Pretty nice feather in my cap. They're hard tests. They're very hard tests.
I better be careful what I debate you about. Here we go. let's talk about. I teased this up beforehand. I want to talk about Social Security. You make the case that, or you're. There was a question that you've been asked and something you brought up about, okay, and I think it was recently in the press, is Social Security going bankrupt? Now, let me just start this by saying that I've been doing this a long time, a little bit older than you. Social Security has always been going bankrupt, along with the post office. So the latest item that we saw was that Social Security was going to be bankrupt in 2035.
Yep.
So what's the real story?
Yeah. Well, so is Social Security going bankrupt? The short answer is no. I mean, there's always money coming in from Social Security. If you get money withheld from your paycheck, FICA, your employer makes a contribution. It's essentially 12% of your wages. So there's lots of money coming into Social Security. And there's lots of money going out of Social Security, going to retirees who have paid into the system. So in 2035, Social Security is going to take in more money than ever before in the form of those contributions from people who are working. The problem is it's also going to pay out more money than ever before. And those outflows are going to exceed the inflows. So what's happened for the last 40 or 50 years, for a long time actually, is more money has come into Social Security than has gone out, which is great. So it's been socked away into this rainy day fund, and that fund has been growing. But now it's flipped. And for a lot of reasons, you know, the biggest of which is some are good and some are not so good. It's good that people are living longer. That means they're enjoying longer lives, generally a good thing for society. It also means they're collecting Social Security checks for longer. And the other thing that happened that's not so good, at least in my perspective, is people are having a lot fewer kids. It's down from 3-point-something in the 1960s down to like 1.5 average kids that the average woman is having in America now.
I have so many friends that have half kids.
Yeah. So that means that there's a lot fewer people paying into the system. There's a lot fewer workers. So anyways, we built up this rainy day fund for 40, 50, 60 years as we had these surpluses, and then it flipped, and now we're paying out more in benefits than we're taking in, and it's going to be depleted pretty quickly. I think it flipped in 2021 or 2022, and within a decade, I think now by 2033 or 34, it's going to be totally wiped out. That rainy day fund is going to be gone.
What do you think of the idea, if I may?
Of Social Security.
Basically, instead of you have a choice. You could leave it in Social Security, or you could take that money that you would be paying in and invest it yourself. In other words, as a worker, I'm talking about. The problem with that is it's a Ponzi scheme, isn't it? That now that I'm thinking about it, they're using current payments to pay for Social Security payments. In other words, my current Social Security tax is being utilized to pay for current payments to Social Security recipients.
Yeah. So let's dive in. I want to dive into that term a little bit, Ponzi scheme. So I think Ponzi scheme kind of implies something nefarious or fraudulent. And I don't think, at least to my knowledge, there's nothing fraudulent with Social Security. I mean, it's very transparent. There's a ton of regulation and insight into this. But having said all that, yes, it functions exactly like a nefarious, fraudulent Ponzi scheme, and that you need money to keep coming into it in order to keep the thing running. And now to your other question about what do I think about it? If I had the option, if it were optional, this is mandatory, right? Your employer has to make a contribution. You have to make a contribution from your paycheck. It's mandatory. There's no way out of it. It's essentially forced retirement. I don't know of any rational person that would opt into this if it were optional, because I don't say that as a political statement. I say that as a mathematical statement. Like, if you look at the numbers, you're getting over the long term, you're getting in the neighborhood of like a 3-4% annual return on this money that you're forced to set aside, which, okay, that's not terrible, but I would do much better if I had been able to, instead of setting this money into Social Security, and I'm going to receive more than I pay in, just to be clear, but it's a pretty dismal return that I'm going to get over the long term. So I don't know of any rational person who would look at this and say, yes, I would love to get a 2-3% over the long term. No, give me the money. Let me invest it myself. And I'll get, 6-8% return that you can get from the stock market or from a diversified portfolio. Now, the problem is human nature there, Andrew, I think, right? Like, people, not everyone is going to do this, right? They're not going to set aside the money. They're going to take this extra windfall, and they're gonna buy a boat or a vacation, and they're not gonna kind of set it aside for retirement, right? So I think that's the I guess where the rub is. If we could solve for human nature, then it'd be hard to argue that we would be much better off if this were optional and folks were able to do with their money as they please, right, instead of being essentially forced to take this pretty dismal long term return.
They're forced to, because, like you said and you alluded to, The probability is that if it was optional, they would just spend it.
Yeah.
And then what do we got?
That's right.
Then what do we have? Right. No. Yeah. There's no social security. There's no financial security in the future. So let's dovetail that into the discussion about, let's put a bow on this, I should say. All these alarmists that you see out there that are freaking out. I'm not sure what the benefit is, what they're trying to sell, by the way. You know, the world's going to end. Get the bunker, get the gold, silver. Social Security is over. What are they selling something? What is the story there?
Well, I think yes, they're selling page views and fear porn or clicks or whatever you want to call it, right? They're trying to get it. But I'll say, Andrew, like they're not totally wrong. Like Social Security will not exist in its current form a decade from now. And again, like that's not a political statement. It's a mathematical one. The trust fund is going to run out of money. There will still be lots of money coming in, but like something is going to have to give at that point. And there's, you know, the two easy, like most black and white options are, we're going to have to increase those taxes. So instead of you putting 6.2% of your paycheck and your employer putting 6.2%, we're going to have to jack up that 12.4% up to about 16 or 17 or 18%. So that's the one thing you can do. You can say, workers and employers, you got to pay up. You got to pay more. You got to pay more into the system. The other end of it, you know, it's money in and money out. So you can get more money in, or you can take less money out and you can slash benefits. You can cut benefits by, you know, 20 to 30% are some of the numbers that I've seen that would get this thing to balance out and fund this for a while.
They'll be ragers.
I think there's if there's one thing that retirees do really well, they show up on election day and
they
vote.
Do.
So you show me a politician who wants to tell retirees that their benefits are getting slashed by 20 to 30%, and I'll show you a lunatic, right? Who's not going to be in office for much longer.
Change the election that you can only vote between like 9 p.m. and 12 p.m. And that will shut down the retirees. But the fact is, it's a full day affair.
Yeah. So I think both of those things that I just mentioned, like those are pretty tough for different reasons politically, right? To tell people, you know, especially right now where lots of pocketbooks are being pinched, say, hey, you know, I know you're struggling. I know everything costs a lot more, but we got to jack up your Social Security contribution. Or to tell retirees, hey, you know, that money you were getting every month that we promised you that you paid into the system, we're slashing it by 30%. Like, I just think both of those are non-starters politically. So I think what's more likely is you kind of Frankenstein this thing together and you nibble around the edges a little bit. You raise the retirement age from 67 to 68 or 69 or 70. And you say, hey, people are living longer. So, you know, you're gonna have to wait longer to get your benefits.
Right.
You know, we are gonna raise it, not all the way to 16%, but we're gonna have, you know, the employers chip in a little bit more.
Or more of an income-based situation. I've always felt that, you know what, if you're in the top 1%, you need your $2,000 Social Security check, really?
Yeah, that's right. And there's ways to do that kind of, you know, I don't want to get too into the weeds here, but there's these bend points where you can essentially, it's the opposite. We have a progressive tax system where the higher your income, the lower or the higher your tax rate. It's kind of the opposite of that. The higher your income, the lower your Social Security benefits will be.
Or the higher your Social Security the higher the taxes on your Social Security benefit.
Yeah. And there's ways to do that without going all the way to zero. Right. There's some levers you can pull there. You know, the other thing I've kind of seen some kind of trial balloons floated on this is folks saying, let's get rid of the 401k. It was designed to incentivize retirement savings. It does that.
But what it also do, it also saved billions, trillions of dollars by corporations not having to do a damn thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's bad. That's a bad situation.
Sure. Sure. So I think what you're going to see is some Frankenstein thing. And unfortunately, like we're not going to know for a while, right? Because we've got in Washington, D.C. minds, 2033, 2034, that's forever away. I mean, you kick this can down the road because it's not a can. It's like a hornet's nest, right? So you don't want to deal with it. There's not a lot of incentive for politicians to say, hey, let's get ahead of this thing. Let's deal with it now so people can plan and they know what's coming. Because whatever there's lots of options, right? I just ran through a whole bunch of ways that you could fix this. That's the good news. There's lots of levers to pull. There's lots of options. The bad news is they all suck. They're terrible yeah. options. They're going to piss off retirees. They're going to piss off young people who are just getting into the workforce and are seeing their taxes go sure. up. There's no good option. So, you know, I'm kind of bashing on politicians a little bit here, but I get it. Like, it's human nature. You don't want to, if you don't have to tackle this thing that's toxic and is guaranteed to piss off someone, why would you kick yeah. the can down the road a little bit? And now, unfortunately, that means uncertainty, right? Investors don't know. Like, that's hard. If you don't know, hey, what can I actually count on in retirement mm-hmm. from the government? What are my tax rates going to look like going forward? How much am I going to be able to save? Like, uncertainty is bad for the markets as a whole, and it's bad for the individual investor too. But unfortunately, I think there's a lot of uncertainty here.
Let's talk about one thing that we're all certain about, and that's taxes.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the impact of taxes on investment returns over time. I know this is something that you are pretty passionate about, the idea that, you know what, net returns and make sure that you don't pay overly in taxes and maybe some deferral, but I'm going to let you take it from there. But tell me where people maybe make mistakes and where people actually make some real headway when it comes to doing this the right way.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about how there can sometimes be a trade-off. If you're just chasing the lowest fee, you end up maybe missing out on some returns. I don't think that's the case with taxes. I think this is the free lunch, right? If you pay less in taxes, that just kind of flows straight to the bottom line, and there's not a whole lot that you're giving up there. Now there's a little bit more to it than that. I'm making a little bit of a generalization, but I think that it comes down. I mean, the biggest thing that it comes down to is there is this it starts with a mindset. I think there's a very defeatist attitude among a lot of Americans about taxes. Kind of there's nothing I can do about it. And I'm scared to even go near that because if I lower my taxes, I'm not being patriotic and I'm going to end up getting audited or thrown in jail or whatever. So I would start with that mindset and say, you know, we're talking about tax incentives here. Like, not only are you, certainly there's some gray area and there's some lines you don't want to go over, but there's so much that is cut and dry, 100% allowed. And not only allowed, but think about the word tax incentive, right? This is like the government wants you to do this. They created an incentive because they want people to save for retirement. They want people to save for college. And they give you these incentives to do exactly that. So I think that's one thing. It's just kind of looking at it.
They need you to save for retirement because they know that. So just get back to that point, that Social Security may not be here forever. So they make incentive for 401ks, for IRAs, Roths, you know, pick your poison, whatever it is, 529 plans for college, all these things that you could save a little bit of money because you're going to need it in the future.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
So where do you put the mutual funds and ETF discussion?
In the tax discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that you invest in the, I mean, you can invest in whatever you're doing, whatever your strategy is, if you want active, passive, whatever, let's just say whatever you come up with, whether you're going to chase the absolute lowest cost or you're going to be a bit more nuanced about it, you're in ETFs, you're in mutual funds, whatever it is, do it in a tax efficient way. I mean, certainly there's some differences between mutual funds and ETFs when it comes to the tax efficiency. But I think my point is, regardless of where you land on that, do it in the most tax efficient way possible. So, for example, let's just say you're going to hold a super low cost Vanguard mutual fund.
Mm-hmm.
Do it in an IRA. Do it in a Roth IRA. Do it in your 401k. Make sure you're holding the money. You're holding the investment there, especially if you're a younger person, because over the course of the decades that you're going to be able to compound, taxes have a massive, massive impact on what you ultimately, to come back to what I said at the beginning, what you ultimately take home, what you keep. And I think that's, you know, that's what really matters. And I think the other way, just to get back to the idea of the mindset here, thinking about paying less in taxes, every dollar, like, I am not Scrooge McDuck, right, Andrew? Like, I don't go home at night and dive into a pile of gold coins. Yeah. I'm not saving on taxes so that I can go to my vault every night and roll around in the money, right?
I can see it.
I'm saving on taxes because I want to retire earlier. Mm-hmm. I want to work a little bit less and spend more time with my kids. And the money that I save, it does not end up in that vault of coins. It ends up in the pockets, most of it goes to It ends up in the pockets of the employees who work at the businesses that I support, right? So I think a lot of folks get caught up on this idea of you know, trying to not pay taxes is un-American in some way, or there's some moral concerns about it. I don't think that at all. I think kind of the opposite, actually. If you think you are an efficient allocator of capital, you have almost an obligation to be tax efficient and pay. My recommendation to people, just to be totally explicit, is pay what you legally owe in taxes and not a penny more.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, I'm not advocating, you know, there's lots of people who step over that red line and get into those gray areas, but there's tons of stuff, you know, in the walk up to that gray area. And we can talk about some of it, but there's tons of low hanging fruit. It's essentially, it's the free lunch. Like I said, that is, that's the alpha for a lot of folks is, you know, I'm not gonna generate alpha by outpicking Warren Buffett, being a better stock picker than Warren Buffett. I'm going to be super tax efficient. And just by virtue of doing that, I'm going to beat 90-95% of other investors.
You know, Michael, it's interesting because there is, again, in that genre, we first talked about fees and when's it too much? You know, when's it get out of control that you're focusing so much on that you're not seeing anything else? But inside that same discussion, I think this is a little bit different, but when it comes to tax efficiency, there are things out there that are very tax efficient that may not be in the best interest of your long term. What I mean by that is, you know, I see a lot of these insurance guys selling like whole life insurance
yeah.
as a great tax deferred retirement plan. As a matter of fact, I was talking to somebody like a couple of days ago about this, and you know, that's what they have for retirement. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. By the way, full disclosure, so all you people that like this or hate this, I own whole life insurance for myself. I think it is a good tool to be used. But you can get into some of these annuities, for example, that have just the most bizarre calculation methodologies. And the overriding thought is, well, it's tax deferred.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with life insurance. So there is a little bit of going overboard with this stuff that maybe is like, okay, maybe that's not necessary. Same thing with the fee discussion, right?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And you know, unfortunately, everyone's circumstance is going to be a little bit different. Like you're absolutely right. There's some people for whom whole life makes a lot of sense. And there's some other people for whom it doesn't. And, you know, I've said, you know, just to be clear, I've said like this is there's a free lunch here. Like there are trade-offs. There are downsides even to some of like the more plain vanilla tax advantage investment vehicles. So like, for example, with an IRA or with a 401k, you got to be comfortable like setting your money. Like you're not going to see that money until you're 59 and a half or else you're going to risk a big penalty. Right. So there are some drawbacks to some of these, to a lot of these. And that's where, you know, for some folks who are comfortable diving into the weeds here and figuring this out,
mm-hmm.
they can kind of navigate that. You know, I think there's this, I think this is where professional advisors add a ton of value to is helping folks to be more tax efficient. And that's a little bit weird to say because, you know, they'll tell you like, oh, I can't provide tax advice, right? A lot of financial advisors can't provide tax advice legally, but they can help you to structure a portfolio in a way such that is way more tax efficient than it would be otherwise. And there's a ton of ways that they can do that. So I think for a lot of folks, like that's the big win of working with a professional is they'll help you. They'll help you maximize, or I shouldn't say maximize, they will help you optimize mm-hmm. the tax efficiency of your portfolio. Mm-hmm. So to your point, they'll help you take advantages of the opportunities that make sense and steer clear of those that, yes, you know, there's some tax advantages of whole life, but it doesn't make sense for you for XYZ reasons.
So let's talk about something that I saw and I read on something we talked about. The idea of building a $1 million portfolio that you can have basically the ability to have a quote unquote worry-free retirement. You have seven different concepts, which I'm sure some of them we talked about already, right? But can you give me a few more?
Yeah. So I think that the idea is the problem in some ways is not that there is too little information out there. It's that there's too much, right? Like we have We have multiple 24/7 cable news networks devoted entirely to financial markets.
No, they're devoted entirely to what the Fed's going to do. Let's just be clear.
Yeah, yeah, and what NVIDIA earnings are going
right,
to be.
Exactly,
right,
exactly. Right. That's it.
Yeah. We'll probably have NVIDIA News Network before too long here. I think.
You like it.
But it kind of becomes difficult to kind of separate the signal from the noise and focus on what actually matters. Like, it doesn't matter for most people what NVIDIA earnings do. Like, it doesn't matter because it's not going to move the needle for them. So I think that what's important is that you focus on what is going to move the needle, what is going to move the needle for you. I think that is incredibly important. You know, another piece of this that we've talked a lot about is taxes are super important for most people, for the vast majority of Americans. You dramatically increase your chances of retiring with $1 million if you're maxing out or coming close to maxing out some of your retirement accounts. It's just the, you know, the simple math that kind of what matters, what ultimately matters is what you keep. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, the big message that I have there is it can get hard to simplify, because there's just so much stuff out there and it's so hard to tell, you know, what is actually going to move the needle for me? Am I going to do this complex thing and it's going to end up saving me $12 in taxes? That doesn't move the needle. But doing things like maxing out your 401k, doing things like a backdoor Roth, if you're self-employed, doing things like a solo 401k, those kind of have the potential to actually move the needle.
So when you're teaching this and you're educating, tell me how that works. I mean, some of the things that you do and some of the other topics that you've had recently that have been designed to, as you would say, I guess, get people towards, you know, the future, right? Towards the future with, as we talk about it here, with, you know, financial security. Does everybody need to work with a financial advisor?
No, I don't think so. I think it's very different. I think a lot of people will benefit tremendously from doing it. And like I said, I think that in a lot of cases, just the inherent tax savings that come from working with a financial advisor pays for itself. For other folks, maybe it doesn't make sense. Maybe because they like it, right? Like, a lot of people just enjoy doing this stuff and enjoy having that sense of control. But what I always encourage people to do, Andrew, is kind of think about this, like, do a scenario analysis. Like, you're trying to make a financial decision. Give yourself two scenarios or three scenarios or four scenarios and say, okay, I've got to make some assumptions. But let's say I do scenario A or B or C or D. How much money am I going to have after tax in retirement? And if you kind of use that as your endpoint. And if you can crunch the numbers and say, okay, scenario A is the best for me, or scenario B is the best, then maybe you're better off. Maybe you're equipped to do this on your own, assuming that you like it, of course. If you're struggling to even understand what those scenarios are, or to understand what the assumptions are that you need to make, then maybe you need you'd benefit from working with a professional doing this. So, like, one example is, I was. You look at a health savings account. It's this tax advantage investment vehicle. Mm-hmm. You can use it to set aside money for healthcare expenses. And there's some tax advantages to it. Doesn't make sense for everyone. Makes a lot of sense for other people. So if you're kind of looking at this, I encourage you to say, well, think about the two scenarios, or maybe there's possibly three scenarios here. What if you don't contribute to this thing? You just invest in a taxable brokerage account. How much money are you going to have, you know, assuming X, Y, and Z after 20 years? And then run another scenario. What if you do invest in this? How much money are you going to have after X, Y, Z? And it ultimately becomes pretty easy, right? If you compare those two numbers and you decide, okay, well, I optimize my expected net worth by going down this route. Now, if you can do that, if you can go through that exercise, that's fantastic. If you can't, maybe that's an indication that you want to get a little help and get someone who's got a few letters after their name who can help you run those numbers.
So the way I see it is like this. It's a matter of perspective. My audience has heard this before, but basically, why do you go to get your hair cut? Most people, why do you get your hair cut by, whether it's a professional or just someone else? It could be someone in your family. Why does someone else do it? The reason is very simple, as I see it. It's a matter of perspective. First of all, I can't see behind me. They can. I may not be able to see on top of me. Maybe some mirrors and kind of contort myself a little bit, but not easy. And it's looking in a mirror, it's kind of like upside down and backwards trying to cut my hair and move around. There's no flip to mirror flip like we have in Zoom, right? So it's a matter of perspective and reasoning why people, not everybody, some people are bald. Some people like to do it themselves. Some people let their hair grow forever. They don't cut it. But for a lot of people, they want to use a hairstylist, a hairdresser, a barber, because there is that extra added benefit of perspective. And then on top of it, they've been trained in this and they know maybe what some things that are better. They're talking hair all day, just like we're talking finance all day. Right?
Yeah, that's right. And I'd point out too, that this stuff is it's kind of going to dovetail into something we were talking about a little bit earlier. This stuff is constantly changing, right? Like our tax code alone is, depending on what methodology you use, it's somewhere between 7,000 and 70,000 pages, and stuff's changing all the time, right? Like the Inflation Reduction Act, for example, introduced a whole bunch of incentives for energy efficient upgrades that you can make to your home. There's a bunch of other stuff, right? Like staying on top of this stuff can be a full-time job. And that's one of the benefit of a professional is they, you know, that it is their full-time job, right? And this is going to continue to change year to year. This tax code is kind of Frankenstein together, and it's pretty overwhelming and pretty complicated. And the only thing I know for sure is that it's going to be different next year than it was this year. Mm-hmm. And these things change, and you risk missing out of that, on them, or, you know, or doing something wrong, doing something that you shouldn't be doing. If you're not constantly staying up to date on it. And then, you know, the other thing I'd say is that a lot of people, like, this just isn't, they could do it. They have the capacity to do it. They have the knowledge, but like, it's not fun. It's not enjoyable. And if that's the case, like, I think that, you know, I think we, most people have two things pretty high up on their wish list. They want less anxiety and they want more time. So if working with a financial professional is going to check those boxes for you, I'd be willing to bet that it's worthwhile just from, you know, it's hard to quantify peace of mind, right?
But it's really easy. It's really easy to quantify fear and anxiety.
Yeah.
Over the future. Yeah. I mean, that's an easy thing to deal with about, especially when markets do the wrong thing. I've had clients over the years say, hey, let's put more into the market. I'm like, no, that is not right. We're not doing that now. As a matter of fact, we're going to kick back a little bit. Or I've had the opposite, right? Hey, take me out. It's like, well, why? What are we doing? It's just, it's 3 days of a down move. It's down 2% the markets. Who cares? You know, well, I think this or that, or this president's getting in or that, or Nancy Pelosi did this. It's like, okay, no. You know, the problem is, as you mentioned, we live in a world that is checkered with clickbait and headline-driven, you know, nonsense. That is the only thing, because people only read headlines and they think the headline is the actual news. So that becomes a problem. Not everybody wants to spend Memorial Day studying for the CFA test.
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, I think you call it perspective, but having kind of a more level-headed, stable, someone who's been through this, you know, you've been through a few cycles, right? And you kind of know how this works. Yeah. And you know, it's stressful at the time, but with it, you gain a little bit of perspective of what the long term looks like, and you see a few of these full cycles before. And it's a, you know, in a good way, it's no one will ever care as much about your money as you do. But that can be a good thing in a way, right? Yep. Like, yes, you read up and know your stuff and make sure that you're asking the right questions and pushing back on some things where you see things differently. But it sounds maybe counterintuitive. It sounds odd, but it can be good to have someone who cares a little bit, who cares a little bit less than you do. Yes, they love their clients and they care about their clients and they want to see them do well, but they have the perspective and they have a little bit of distance from it. That's going to allow them to not get caught up in the fear or the euphoria, by the way, and do dumb things that you're going to regret.
Yep. Good stuff. So tell me, tell us what exactly you do over at Wealth Channel.
Yeah, so we do a lot of education. We put together some tools, some calculators. We put together a lot of educational videos that are based around this idea of kind of the scenario analysis that I mentioned, helping people to kind of break down these complicated things and kind of understand them in just a few minutes and in kind of some simple ways to understand, okay, here's my options. Here's the assumptions. I understand now how to do this analysis. And then the other thing that we do, because I firmly believe that for some people, a financial advisor is a great idea. And for others, maybe it doesn't make sense, is if you decide, you know what, I don't like doing this. I don't get it. I don't have the capacity. For whatever reason, I want to work with a financial advisor. We can help you find someone who's going to check all those boxes and who's going to be a good fit for you. Because, you know, in addition to knowing their stuff, it's got to be someone who you like and who you can trust. So I firmly believe that there are different paths to a worry-free retirement for different people. For a lot of folks, it's a self-directed route. They're going to be hands-on. They've got the capacity as well as the enthusiasm and the time to do it themselves. For other folks, they're going to be better off working with a professional. And whatever you fall into, there's no wrong answer, right? We're all different and we have different scenarios, different strengths and weaknesses. But we worry-free retirement should not be a luxury good. So whatever your path is that's going to get you there, I want to help you find it and help you take a step forward.
Good stuff. Michael, I passed the CFA on the first time. Johnston, I appreciate you coming aboard. And we're going to have all the information on how to get in touch with you over on the show notes at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Episode number 870 is where you'll look, and that will be on there. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it, buddy.
Pleasure talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. And that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you're enjoying your summer. And if you're not, get out there and enjoy. It's time to take a break and to really bask in all the successes that you've had and the successes that you're going to have in the future. Thanks for joining me this week and every week. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice, or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.